District of Conservation is sponsored by the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow, better known as CFECT. To learn more about our sponsor, head over to CFECT.org. Thanks for listening to the program.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to District of Conservation. I am your host, Gabriella Hoffman. This podcast offers a sober examination into all things hunting, fishing, shooting sports, energy, environment, and the public policy surrounding it. And this podcast also specializes in original interviews that you won't hear elsewhere. Here's what I have for you today. It's great to revisit with you, Senator Marshall. Thank you so much for joining the podcast again.
Gabrielle, it's great to be with you. I know we got some great subjects to cover today, so let's get at it.
I listened to your interview with Ben Cassidy from SEI, and you were talking about sandhill crane hunting, which really perked my ears because I've heard that they're ribeye in the sky. So how has your season been this past season? I know we're trickling into turkey season. You like to get into the field and on the water outside of your time serving in the Senate. So what has been up with you? Have you had time to go to the field?
You know, I have. I probably had, I think, four really good hunts this past year. When I was home being a physician, I would take every Thursday off and go hunting. And then most Saturday or Sunday, I'd squeeze something in. But we had a really successful sandhill crane season this year. For whatever reason, they stayed around much longer. Usually they're gone by Thanksgiving, but they stayed clear until the new year. Now, I can't say the same for our quail and our pheasant. That's been just atrocious the last couple of years. But a great crane season. I love the decoying. I got some buddies that are just really good at it. And through the last, goodness, we've been doing the crane hunting for 25 years or so. So it's an exciting species to hunt.
There's some funny opposition to it. I know, separate from our conversation, I've heard people debate whether or not you should really hunt them. But from my friends who've gone and from hearing you speak about it, it does sound like a really fun hunt. And I know with Congress ramping up, there's a lot obviously happening across different sets of issues. We're going to be largely focusing on natural resources and hunting, but there has been an extension and continued debate over the Farm Bill. I know last year they were supposed to reauthorize it. I know that there have been attempts to extend it. And so people are familiar. My audience is pretty familiar with a lot of the conservation provisions. It's a very big bill. Some people don't understand it. They're very confused about it. I think one of the more redeeming aspects to the Farm Bill, even if you may not know it or like it or whatever, there are really good conservation programs in it. So could you speak to some of the conservation programs you like and you think most Americans who are conservation minded would like?
Right. So a Farm Bill is about 5% of the Farm Bill goes towards a farmer, about 5% for conservation programs, but 85% is for food programs. And the challenge right now in getting the Farm Bill across the finish line is my friends across the aisle don't want to help us out any with the agriculture programs. They want to make it more food specific. The conservation programs, and I want to emphasize that farmers and ranchers were our original conservationists, and right behind them are my fishermen and hunters, that we put our money where our mouth is. We like to establish habitat. We know that whether you like fishing or hunting, it's all about the habitat. What the Farm Bill does, CRP is a great program, a conservation program, conservation reserve project. Yeah, we have some of that land that we own as well, that we set it aside. It's kind of marginal land from crops, but we turn it into grasslands. We can put food plots in it. So that would be but one example. There's something called EQIP, which would have a lot of conservation programs surrounding water conservation, putting in grass strips to protect the rivers from the fertilizers that we put down, the pesticides that we put down, to try to filter those out before they get to the rivers as well. And that's important not just to those rivers out in the field, that those rivers eventually end up, of course, as water sources for these big urban centers. We're building lots of wetlands as well. There's funding in here for wetlands. Again, personally, we've had two huge, enormous wetland projects that we personally have done on our land as well, not with federal government funding, but try to any type of wetland conservation land are opportunities. Cover crops is another particular thing where we try to preserve moisture. Just remind your listeners that agriculture is growing more with less than ever. We're using less water, less fertilizers, less pesticides, and these Farm Bill programs help accentuate those.
Yeah, and everyone knows about the importance of farmers and ranchers, and I think this week is National Ag Worker Appreciation Week, or it's some agriculture-related week as we're talking. And it seems like all these directives from the Department of Energy and all these other agencies are targeting and trying to squeeze the farmers and ranchers, putting unrealistic demands on them, whether it's the Securities and Exchange Commission or EPA or something of that nature, and even sometimes USDA, as we're starting to see these finalized rules. Why are they hamstringing farmers and ranchers, even though they are, like you said, some of the original conservationists, they're willing partners, but why do they have so many constraints and burdens placed on them by regulation right now?
Well, that's a great question. Since Joe Biden took office, he's declared war on American agriculture, on rural America, as well as American energy. And they do that through things like Waters of the U.S. So they're expanding what they would consider a navigable waterway. So instead of just applying rules to major water fares, they're trying to regulate the runoff of waters from a crop as well. And then they use the Endangered Species Act to regulate us as well. And, you know, the big issue back home is the lesser prairie chicken. The first bird I shot was a prairie chicken. It's something that a tradition. It's the first weekend in November is the opening of prairie chicken season. We hunt the greater prairie chicken where I was born and raised. The lesser prairie chickens out west, their numbers have come up and down based upon the drought. We have a lot of good ranchers out there that are doing incredible conservation practices. And what they've done privately has far exceeded the success of what the federal government has done as well. So that's how they're doing it. For the why, look, I gave up trying to explain why the president and the White House policies are what they are, but they are an attack on American agriculture as well as a hunter and fisher people as well.
And how do you respond to the news of the fact that basically the LNG pause was a political ploy? I think I saw Secretary Granholm, who has made a mockery of energy policies and energy security, you know, saying she has a magic wand. She doesn't have a magic wand to fix things. So she said basically within a year, they're going to restore LNG, you know, export projects. How do you respond to that news?
Gosh, I'm totally baffled by all of it. Look, natural gas is going to be a bridge to the future. The natural gas is much cleaner than coal. You know, to make a simple goal to say we're going to change every coal plant into natural gas makes perfect sense to me. You know, we got this war going on over in Ukraine as well, and Russia is financing, of course, their war through their natural gas and oil exports. So when we shut down American natural gas exports, it drives the price up worldwide and actually helps President Putin. So I don't understand, again, where they're coming from. You know, I've had European leaders over here just crying practically because of the energy policies that they've done. Look, again, I want to leave the world cleaner, healthier, safer than I found it. But natural gas is part of the bridge to the future, and excited that the ways we're drilling it, the way we're collecting it, how we're using it now is so much cleaner than before. So I just respond to it to say it makes no sense. It's almost hypocritical of what they're doing, and it defeats the purpose of it.
I know the House passed overwhelmingly a bill to streamline nuclear energy. Are you guys looking to perhaps streamline nuclear in the Senate as well? I don't know what your personal opinions are on nuclear, but that seems to me like the most feasible, clean energy source out there down the road that could potentially be like a replacement. But it obviously has the least amount of carbon footprint. You don't need that much land to build up facilities. And it's really good for national security, job prospects, et cetera. So are you guys looking to do anything on the nuclear front in the Senate as well?
Well, we'll see. Certainly, I'm a huge fan of nuclear energy. It is the bridge to it is the future. I've had the honor to go out to the National Laboratory in Idaho a couple times for the world's leader in nuclear research. I'm excited about nuclear modular reactors. We can actually take the waste from the current nuclear plants and use that to power individual cities. So I could see a day when the future where every community across the country has their own modular reactors. I think that there's opportunities for fusion reactors as well. So I think that we're starting to fund some of that research. I think right now it's not affordable, So now as we build out these prototypes, how do we make it more affordable? But I would think there's a mixed bag of opinions over here. But I think most of the senators that are set on the Energy Committee that actually take a deep dive have come to that same conclusion, that as soon as it's affordable, that nuclear is certainly part of the solution. But in the meantime, I think that the mistakes that this administration is making is putting all their eggs in one basket, thinking that electrical everything is going to be the solution. They don't really take a look at the entire from cradle to grave footprint of some of their solutions, whether it's wind or solar.
Switching gears a bit, Senator, I want to talk about the Second Amendment and guns. I know this is one of your biggest issues, and we've seen such an onslaught on federal firearms dealers. I recall seeing something, I think, from the National Shooting Sports Foundation that the ATF has gone out of their way to basically revoke licenses of law-abiding small mom-and-pop shops. And I believe you have an ATF letter relating to this issue. So could you speak to this attack on the Second Amendment by way of a vehicle of ATF and what can be done to fix that? Because people are turning against gun control. You see polling unfavorable towards gun control directives coming because of higher crime and just a general interest among all swaths of Americans to arm themselves, protect themselves. And people forget that actually excise taxes collected on guns and ammunition fund most of conservation in the United States under Pittman Robertson and Dingell Johnson. So speak to your letter, Senator, and why we are seeing this attack, even though public opinion is shifting.
Yeah, I just got to talk about the Pittman's Roberts just for a second. That's yes. People putting their money where their mouth is. I was honored to sit on the Kansas Wildlife and Parks Commission for quite a while. We were able to build multiple gun ranges with that. We did some amazing things with those monies and look forward to more opportunities in particular with this. But you're even understating the problem. We have thousands of small mom and pop gun stores owners across the state of Kansas that have written us complaining. And elections do have consequences, much like I said, this White House declared war on American agriculture, on American energy. They've declared a war on American gun stores as well. I visited many of these. These are usually multi-generational families that have been running these gun stores for decades. They're used to the ATF coming in and doing an inspection. I talked to a gun store owner 2 weeks ago. I was in a store. He said they sent like half a dozen ATF officers. They spent over a week there in his store doing what I would call a rectal exam. I'm a physician, so forgive me. But they did a complete rectal exam on them, and they'll find one clerical error and then take away their license. It's not like they try to give them an opportunity to fix any type of problem that they see, but they're literally going in there with the purpose of shutting them down. So this is a huge problem. Yes, we're pushing back. We're going to keep pushing back. But folks, you've got to get out and vote. That at the end of the day, who's in the White House does matter. And I can keep pushing back, but this White House, like I said, has declared war on American gun stores, let alone the owners as well. This is one way they're getting at it, and right now they're winning the war. We're finding it really hard ways to push back, but then we take us to court. They delay it. It's a huge problem right now.
You would think they would listen to public opinion, but public opinion doesn't really seem to shape their views here. They just want to go full speed ahead with whether it's net zero or disarming the American public. And relatedly, a component of shooting sports and also hunting is lead ammunition. And I've talked about this issue at great length, Senator. We are very disturbed by the lead prohibitions. And I've hunted and fished with lead components for most of my life, especially on the fishing side. I came into hunting when I was 26. I'm now in my early 30s. And I've done shooting sports for the better part of a decade. And so lead is almost ubiquitous anywhere you go. For different forms of hunting, everyone knows, you know, for duck hunting, waterfowl hunting, yes, they don't use lead shot because of just for that. They studied it extensively, found it had like adverse effects. But for most other shooting sports activities, most users tend to prefer, and also same with fishing, lead components. It's a lot cheaper. It's a lot more scalable, more portable, a lot more affordable for customers, for new entry participants too, into both fishing and hunting. And we see the Biden administration, especially through their Fish and Wildlife Service, double downing on lead prohibitions, conditioning future national wildlife refuges, for instance, on prohibitions of lead, which seem very, devious and also very much like an economic barrier that is being instituted to prevent people from going onto public land. So to me, it seems like not only an affront on your Second Amendment right or your ability to use lead components, but also really undermining what public lands access is. So what are you doing to help combat this overreach from Fish and Wildlife Service?
So once again, we have introduced legislation to push back on this issue. But this is just once again an example of an out-of-touch White House. I was just sitting here thinking, so, you know, to your point, we've all switched from lead to different ammunition to use on waterfowl. And that made perfect sense. I'm a conservationist, but we saw, you know, let's face it, the box of shells, of steel shells, what, $3 to $5 more per box of shells, but we think it's worth it. So we've done it. But I couldn't imagine taking my grandsons to Cheyenne Bottoms Wildlife Refuge or to Quivira to fish and getting there with my tackle box and saying, oh my gosh, I've got lead weights in here. You know, how do you go fishing without some lead? It's hard for me to imagine what that would look like. Again, there's no proof to say that would benefit, have any impact on the wildlife. So let's slow them down. If they want to have policies like this, then show me some science to back it up. A little common sense goes a long ways, but this is the tip of the iceberg of this administration's overreach. I'm probably more concerned about their land grabs that's going on right now. Yeah, so they're using something that they're called, I want to get the names right on these, but they're national monuments, so they're going to try to create national monuments in a refuge area or create wilderness areas. And when they do that, then they're going to limit access to hunters, to sportsmen and women as well. So we're trying to push back on that. You know, of course, and making this a national monument, everyone local, yeah, that makes sense to me. But then they're going to use that to limit your access. And then they're doing these natural assets companies on the private side of this. I'm not sure if you're, I didn't even know this myself, but these assets companies are bringing money together to go in and control some of the wildlife that's owned by the federal government. And again, mm-hmm. they're going to limit the agricultural practices, energy exploration, let alone access to sportsmen and women.
Yeah, I actually did focus a lot on fighting NACs in my capacity with Independent Women's Forum and also with some other partners too. So I was one of the first in media to really shine a light on this because it would not only, you know, infringe on your property rights, but also your public land. So you're absolutely correct. And now they've kind of peeled back and are retooling their efforts, and they're still very interested in pursuing this in natural assets. And Biden has been doing a lot of like natural reporting. I remember a director from early last year came out and said they want to do natural accounting. So this is not going away. And this could have very bad implications, of course, for regular Americans who just want to farm, ranch, graze, go hunting, fishing, hiking, camping. And we're seeing a loss of access, not so much in Kansas, more so out west. We're seeing plans for national monuments for bear's ears, which would restrict target shooting, hunting, OHV, and others. So it could come to a state near you if they're planning to create a national monument out of existing state or federal lands that are already there. Senator Marshall, is there anything else you want to add, or what do you think, or rather, how do you respond to people who say conservatives are not conservationists? Maybe that's a final thing I would like to ask you.
Yeah, look, we all need to keep sharing our stories. Share what you've done to improve the environment. And maybe it's your profession in agriculture. I can talk about taking the waste products from where we process cattle. We take that fat and we're turning it into to diesel. So many things that we're doing in the precision agriculture world. Again, growing more with less is the theme. Everybody that I know that works in fishing and hunting, we're all part of great organizations like DU comes to mind, Pheasants Unlimited. We're all doing just incredible things out there. So share those stories. You know, we took about 60 acres of prairie pot land, and by simply putting up a little dike, have been able to backflood that and create like 60 additional acres next to Cheyenne Bottoms. So we fenced off the creek so the cattle don't get in the creek. And also, so we're doing amazing things out there. So I just want to encourage your listeners to tell your stories, to get involved in those conservation organizations and support them. I do think that they're doing great work. So as I sit here and try to figure out where to appropriate federal dollars for conservation, I know it's going to be much more efficiently used if I have a partner out there. Again, I'll go back to the DU folks, the Ducks Unlimited coming to folks. They're going to have people on the ground that know Cheyenne Bottoms better than anybody on the federal government does. Cheyenne Bottoms is just outside of my home. And you know, I've been part of two major renovations out there, privately and personally donated to them. DU comes in there with their expertise. They do got good engineers and environmentalists. And then you throw some federal dollars and you got a great project. And my folks back home supervising that project to make sure that we include hunters, that there's always a place for hunters to be there as well. So tell your story, and then tell your story. Get the young ones out there to hunt and fish with us. Get them off their social media devices. Take somebody hunting or fishing today. That's what I'd recommend you do.
Those aforementioned groups, I believe, are far more effective than what we're seeing from what is going to be known as, or is currently known as, the Climate Corps, where the government is just going to be pumping more money, billions of dollars, into creating jobs that may not be as effective, or these are jobs that may not materialize, but there already is an existing infrastructure for true conservation efforts. As you said, supporting the groups and efforts like the American Climate Corps, to me, don't scream as effective as just more government waste and really no measurable impact on the environment, and only just creating and bolstering federal jobs. So Senator Marshall, where can my listeners connect with you if they don't already know how to do so?
That's always a good. So marshall.senate.gov is our website, marshall.senate.gov. Our Twitter, Roger Marshall, MD. At Roger Marshall, MD. I'm not allowed to get on my own Twitter, you know that, because I might say something I shouldn't, so I have to get it all filtered. But just go to our website, and they can hook you up. Google Roger Marshall, I bet you find me. Thank you, Gabriella. Great show.
Thank you for coming on, Senator. I know not everyone is very creative like Senator Grassley. I know he has full reins on his personal social media, but it's always good to catch up with you. Thank you so much for coming on. Please keep us posted of how we can be supportive and helpful on the program and what information we could put out there.
Yep. Thanks for your work.
Thanks for listening to District of Conservation. If you enjoyed what you heard today, go leave us some reviews on Apple and Spotify or wherever podcasts are played. Your feedback will help us reach more people, and I love to know what is on your mind after each episode. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to never miss a beat or a guest announcement, because that is our way of updating all of you listeners. And we have just hit 1,000 followers on Instagram for the podcast account. Thank you very much. And if you have any guest suggestions or topics you want to hear on the show, I am all ears. I would love to hear your feedback there. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.